if it's good for us, you should be telling us, you know? Doesn't that make sense?
Absolutely. We have so many areas that have been sequestered away from us. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And, well, like you were saying, with the fact that you've done it, you know, that's your pioneer. That's been, you know, your task for this period of time. What I found is that I've, you know, the thoughts I was thinking 10 years ago, these are kind of mainstream now.
Mm-hmm.
And the further you get into the hidden depths, the further ahead you become. So if you're into something that was really secret 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
is now becoming common knowledge.
Yes, that seems to be the formula. At least that's the way I was informed by one of my mentors, is that anything that's revolutionary takes at least 10 years to filter into society's thinking.
Yes.
Because, of course, the first thing they do is dismiss it and resistance, and eventually they get to the point of accepting it. So, yeah, at some point it'll just become common knowledge. And, you know, I've always maintained, yes, I'm looking forward to being retired or out of a job when it comes to this particular topic. I was not planning on making a lifetime type of endeavor. I mean, it is kind of a lifestyle, especially when you're having encounters of your own, but and trying to make sense of it. But there's no place to go with this information. That's the other problem, really. I find it sort of comical that if you do have an encounter with the UFO, there's no one you can call. There isn't anyone. I mean, the closest thing you can do is report it to a national UFO reporting center, which is just some guy sitting there with a phone and a computer putting up the information on the internet. And what does that do? Nothing. And, you know, I mean, specifically when it comes to Washington, D.C., we have laws about these things. And if you fly, if you're a civilian or anybody, if you fly within the restricted area, you're immediately warned that if you go any further, you could be shot down or arrested or whatever. But when it comes to UFOs or aliens, okay, I guess they can just pop in and out whenever they feel like it. And if you see this happening, don't bother reporting it, because they're not interested. Our government on every level is not interested. And that would include the Washington, D.C. police, okay? It doesn't include the Washington, the Capitol police. They are very interested because that is their turf. And they received a copy of the photographs that were taken by Mr. Allen, and they were very grateful. And that's one of the reasons I contacted the Capitol directly as part of my investigation. I think that put me on somebody's radar pretty quick when I did that. But anyway, that was going through the front door. That was a big mistake. Mr. Allen kept in touch with the detective division. They basically confirmed to him that the pictures that he took of these objects were confirmation of what officers who patrol the grounds were seeing. And that what they've logged, because you have to log everything you do as a police officer, especially at the Capitol. And they take that very seriously. So I was basically saying to them, look, I'm not trying to embarrass you. I want you guys to come on and at least give me some, I'm giving you an opportunity to make a statement here so you don't look foolish. I know you've got a difficult job, especially if you've got UFOs popping in and out. You know? I've worked security. I'm not a police officer, but I know how difficult it is. Part of what they do there is crowd control. They have a lot of people coming through there, you know, and any one of them could be a nut job. You gotta watch people very, very carefully. So eventually, a few years ago, they leaked in a way that would allow for plausible deniability. They leaked to me reports from one of their officers who had two different occasions where he saw these spherical UFOs over the Capitol while he was on duty, and which, of course, he reported. But it was done in such a way that, like I said, I didn't know the officer's name or rank at the time, or, you know, I should say currently. And so it was very cloak and dagger the way they did it, but I appreciated the fact that they were letting me speak for them, or I should say about them, and the circumstances that they face is very difficult, because they're not the controlling authority there at the Capitol. They work there, and they do, like I said, a very difficult job. Most of the time, they do it very professionally. But this is an added component they have to deal with. And I'm sure they're not happy about it, because they have no control over aliens. You know what I mean? But they know, maybe not all of them, but the officers do know, because they're reporting it. They talk. It's a very small force, by the way. Mm. Very, very, very small force of individuals, men and women, working in and inside as well as outside of the Capitol facility. So, yeah, it's just, oh my God. I stepped in it big time when I started this investigation. If I'd only known where this is all heading, I probably would have never even taken that first step. Mm-hmm. Would have been like all the other people said, not interested. But you know, it is what it is. I guess I shouldn't have any real regrets about this, because somebody had to do it. It's possible if it wasn't me, it would have been someone else. But
yeah, and somebody else may not have done it to the degree of excellence that you did.
I suppose, as good as it gets, you know. Yeah, I think I did. I did put my best foot forward here. Not that, again, it's really not about me. There was such a tremendous amount of information. The reason it took 6 years is because a lot of it was just scattered in every direction. Some of it was totally buried. And then to put it into a timeline, that was difficult. Mm-hmm. That was difficult to untangle, especially in the 50s, where you had the media was reporting the military had officially like two or three times that they'd gone to intercept the UFOs, which were, they were loitering for sometimes 6 to 8 hours. They'd be moving at maybe 150 miles an hour up to 6,800 miles an hour in the atmosphere. What?
Yes.
What? I mean, and then some jackass tells me, oh, that's our secret military. Really? Wow, that's a good secret, you know? I mean, how long have they had that stuff? 1947, got it from the Nazis? Please. I mean, look, I don't know what all the answers are. I'm just saying, a lot of people come to me with their opinion, but I don't think it's based on fact. You know, they haven't really looked at all the information, and it's incredible. It's incredible. One of the things that happened in July 1952 was that we sent up military jets to intercept them. They vanished. I mean, they were either disintegrated in the air, or they were beamed up to a larger mothership, and they never returned to base. The pilots were never seen again. And you could just imagine the panic that ensued in the Pentagon after that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another reason why they were going around confiscating all the cameras and film. People were taking, because according to the historic record, there was hundreds of people watching this event unfolding. Because it wasn't just 2 or 3 days. It actually happened dozens of times that year. Dozens.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. So you can see, you know, like I said, like I've had the postman come to my house and say, so what do you do? Oh, all right. About what? Books. About what? You know, UFOs. Really? Really? I'm interested. I said, really? Oh, Washington, D.C. He's like, what about it? I go, and I start telling him. Next thing I know, he's getting in trouble with his supervisor for hanging out with me too much, reading my books. It's too much. It's actually, honestly, I think it's overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
For some people. They just they look at me sideways like, oh, you've lost your mind. But I understand that. You know, in fact, I understood, in fact, early on when I reported this, I totally accepted why people were being skeptical. But if we're talking about not one event or two events, but hundreds of events over decades, you know, there's a consistency there in the historical timeline, and the fact that so many different people at so many different times and walks of life that they all reported the same thing. Either there's something really weird in the water there, or there's something going on, truly going on there that nobody wants to talk about.
So, right, okay. So first of all, I have to make a confession.
Go ahead.
Is that the archive didn't work until about 10, 15 minutes ago.
Oh, lovely.
So we've been speaking to a select group of people who will be have to be, we'll have to grill them and say, if we can we reconstruct the show?
Jesus. Well, that's you know what? It's par for the course because, like I said, these technical glitches, it's just one of the joys of running a radio show, yes.
I mean, like I said, I've made all the mistakes, and I still continue to make all the mistakes.
Oh, that's quite all right.
But if you've got maybe half an hour more...
I'll do my best.
Would you be okay to hang on for another half hour?
I'll try not to be too drunk.
It's the nectar of the gods.
I can't help myself. It's Super Bowl Sunday, and there are literally millions of people right now drinking beer, and I think there's this collective angst going on about who's going to win, and it's just, you know, I'm not watching the show, but I'm feeling it. I'm literally feeling it in the air right now, especially because I'm in Patriots, the land of the Patriots here. Mm-hmm. I mean, telling you, people are... If you do not support the Patriots or the Red Sox or whatever, people or the Celtics, they think you're off.
Extraterrestrial.
Well, they don't want to socialize with you if you don't like, you know. Mm. Yeah, you gotta be interested in sports or you're outcast here.
Mm. Yeah. So anyway, we've still got some subjects. We've still got some subjects to really chew over, and so you know, plenty of material here. One of the subjects that I'd really like you to speak to. Now, I've spoken to a couple of other people on my show about this, but you have an interesting new wrinkle on it.
Yeah,
and I bet you guess it's the Archons.
Yeah.
It sounds like a rock band from the mid 70s.
Oh, I think there is. Excuse me. I believe if you Google it, there's a band named Archon. Of course.
So now, Zechariah Sitchin and all these guys, they say Archons, well, they're greys and reptoids.
I don't know Sitchin. I don't know if Sitchin said that. Did he really say that about the Archons?
I think so. I think somebody has said that Sitchin said.
He said that he said it. Okay.
So I'm just going by that.
All right.
I admit, you know, I'm crap at doing all that research.
Well, it's John Lash, I think, is the one that really made that, and also Jay Widener.
Jay Widener, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I don't really think, based on if you look at the press release, if the photos and the information I put out there was that the reptilians, yeah, sure, I can see that. But the other thing that the Gnostics were talking about, and the Toltecs, apparently, even in modern times, were these things are, they look like large amoeba or flat fish-like entities, fairly organic-looking, although... You know, Carlos Castaneda's called them inorganic. Well, I don't know what that means. I mean, they look biological to me, but they're obviously not visible to the average person's eyesight. And again, I think I explained that earlier in the show
we're talking about beyond the visible.
Yeah, it's just because it's beyond the visible doesn't mean it's completely in another dimension. Mm. You know, I mean. There's a lot of things around us we don't hear or see, but that doesn't mean they're beyond into another dimension, like the fourth dimension. It just means we can't see them. Mm. But people do take pictures of them, and started back in the 50s, and then NASA got some more shots of them, and I forget when that was. The Tether experiment, I think, is famously when everybody started.
The Tether.
Yeah, when they started seeing just swarms of these things, and then but they look identical to what was photographed out in California in the 50s with infrared film.
Right. And did they find them like just floating in the air? Are they
something like that?
Do they sit on
the
ground or, you know,
I've never seen one sitting on the ground. I don't know. I've never actually seen one. I believe that, as I wrote in the press release, there at the very end of it, I give a part of it was the first chapter of this novel that I was writing about my life, because, like I said, most of my life, people wouldn't believe it, so I just wrote it as a novel. But part of it is where I actually save a boy's life, and in the process, I'm literally attacked by these, I call them just parasites, mental parasites. And that was over 20 years ago. So in hindsight now, I would have to say that it was probably this particular type of archon, which, to be specific now, that's just a Greek term that means lord or ruler.
All right.
So these things, according to the Gnostic, a particular sect of Gnostic, they're like very... like almost like shamans or seers or whatever, they had this vision of these entities and some sort of knowledge that they had invaded our world long ago, and that they were sort of like the masters of the matrix here, or basically our evil overlords that were manipulating us covertly so that they could feed off of what you call the louche, this negative energy that we generate through when we're have fear, anger, greed, all these things. So Castaneda's had talked about them as being
parasites.
I don't know about that so much as he Don Juan described them as foreign installations in our mind, that they literally were like insinuating themselves into our conscious.
So more like a what we'd call an implant nowadays.
Yes and no, but they're not. They're not implanted. They have a way, somehow, I don't know if it's telepathy or what, but they do have some means where they can actually speak to our conscience. And the really messed up part about it here is that they we don't know that because we don't see them, and we don't recognize them as being something other than ourselves. When we hear the voices, and historically, there's plenty of people, I heard the voice of God, or the devil told me to do it. It's really very fairly common. So these things, I guess, I think it would be fair to say that they may have been what we call demons historically here in this world. Isn't that the role of a demon, basically, is to covertly control the actions of an individual, violate their free will?
Yeah, there's what was it? It was I think I read somewhere that in some old book it was that there are demons and Satans, and a demon acts on the emotional level, and Satan's exact on the mental level. So they'll plant ideas rather than urges. Demons do urges, and Satans do ideas, or something like that.
Either way, though, it has the same effect. Yeah. As far as getting us to do things we normally wouldn't consider logical or, positive.
Out of character, yeah.
Yeah, right. And it's, okay, the Catholic Church defines this as possession. And that was the other thing that I discovered about Washington, D.C., that the movie The Exorcist is based on a real news report from 1949. I was a 13-year-old boy there in Washington, D.C. that was possessed. By an entity, and during the daytime he had no idea of what he'd done. Actually, at nighttime he didn't know either, because it wasn't him. This entity had literally taken over his mind and body. So once I recognized that, and also that there's a demon, historically there's what they call a demon cat. It's not a real cat, it just appears, this entity, that cat-like entity appears usually in the sub-basement of the Capitol. The Capitol, where they make all the laws. So there's multiple examples I give of people seeing demons and or being possessed by them in Washington, D.C. And I also lay out the historical connection to the Vatican, between Washington, D.C., in the Vatican. It's a very incestuous relationship, and most of that has been very much swept under the rug. But anyway, it's essential to understand, because if you've got these demonic entities there in D.C. and also in the Vatican, we got a problem. We got a real problem. I started to see that it's possible that they don't need to manipulate every one of us if they can manipulate our leaders. They can certainly affect we're serving their agenda. In other words, however, when this latest press release that we're discussing now with the photographs and stuff, it became clear to me that anybody and everyone is susceptible to these various types of archons or demonic aliens, satanic aliens, whatever you want to call them. And they are legion. You remember in the book, the Bible, allegedly when Jesus said to he was performing an exorcism on this man who was possessed, and he cast them out, and they said, no, don't kill us. put us over there in that herd of pigs. And he says, well, who are you? And they said, we are Legion. Well, that's not their name. Mm. It just means that there's a lot of them.
Yeah, we're everywhere. Yeah,
yeah, and apparently there's more than one kind of them. Mm. Just like we know, the aliens are, they're not just reptilians or greys. There's a lot of them, different kinds that exist. And some of them apparently are totally human too. And I would have to assume that we're all related to one another. I just can't imagine that we're not.
All right, so let's just get the microscope out, because
okay,
here's the thing. A few years ago, I'm an IT guy, and I was fixing the computer of a doctor. And this doctor was a German fellow, and very up on all the latest stuff. And he was more than just a physical doctor. He understood homeopathy and vibrational healing, and he said he worked on all the levels. Now, one of the things that he told me was that bacteria, in their billions, as they breed in our stomachs, and in our digestive systems and places like that,
mm-hmm.
that it is they that produce cravings and mm-hmm. behaviors, you know, like ADHD and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he said when he clears these kids who are ADHD of these bacteria, mm-hmm. bang, they're back to normal.
Right, because it's a hive mentality that they have, yes. that they impart to us. And so, yeah, these amoeba-like creatures are, okay, fine, they're more like, but they just look like very large amoebas. But, yes, they could have a collective consciousness, and they're working together towards this, whatever, their hidden agenda, basically. It's a lot like The Matrix, you know, mm-hmm. where they show we're a battery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're actually an energy source. Well, I think that was a very clever way of, you know, describing to us what we really do. It's not to run machines. It's to help the Archons, continue on. But, they've also, as there's a study that came out recently about taking too many antibiotics, in other words, killing off your bacteria with this chemicals, causes a change in one's personality or mental function. And it's exactly because of what you just described.
Yeah.
We are not just a simple flesh and bone. We have entire ecosystems within our body of, you know, various bacteria, viruses,
and so our consciousness is an ecosystem.
Because they have a conscience too. Like I said, everything has a consciousness. Yes. Everything. You know, in Native Americans say that, you know, everything has a spirit. Well, that's, you know, and of course that was dismissed as superstition. There's no proof, right? No, actually there is proof. But you have to be willing to be initiated into that awareness. You can't just tell somebody about it. Mm. You have to show them how to acquire that knowledge or wisdom through experience. Mm.
Well,
a lot of that... Yeah. A lot of it had to do with what we would call having an out-of-body experience.
This is something that actually my show is kind of about, is what I bring in is what's called the study of the seven rays.
Right.
And I don't know if you're familiar with it at all, but essentially mm-hmm. they're saying that that each of the frequency bands, which we call notes or colors,
right,
has a quality. And depending on the note or color of your soul energy, of your personality energy, that will determine your vocational qualities, your personal qualities, the way you interact with people, the way you behave with others, and stuff like that.
Right.
And essentially, that's what we're saying, is that all these different flavors... it's the same as the meaning of a number, you know, the meaning of a color. They say, oh yes, you've got a song in C sharp minor. That means it's romantic. You know, it's like Moonlight Sonata or something like that. If you got if it's in E, it's one of my recurrent guests, Shari Edwards. She'll be on the show next week. She says. Is the note of D, right? And when you're watching these high-definition TVs, mm-hmm. they take the note of D out of you.
Yeah, there's a certain frequency
mm-hmm.
that all electronics emit, And it is very, over time, it can be very harmful because it does cut us off. I mean, we're extremely cut off from the higher cosmic frequencies that exist that we should be plugging into, but for not only for good health, but we would all be telepathic, not only with each other, but with all of the life on this world and beyond, if we didn't have all the distractions and dependencies that we've acquired here on this world at this time.
Mm-hmm. So, that brings us to another of our favorite subjects, and I don't know. I don't know if you're versed in this, but I'm just going to run it by you.
All right.
Tracy Kennedy and I. So Tracy is one of the other hosts on this station. One of them. We have many. Tracy and I have been investigating this being who was called John Dee. Mr. 007, the eyes and ears of Queen Elizabeth I, who made a deal with these beings that he called at the time the Macrobes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I saw your press release and I saw the picture of the Archon or the amoeba thing, and we think of microbes, and, you know, microbes, they're not as, you know, you think of bacteria and you think little tube things. But microbes, to me, when I see microbe, I think little amoeba.
Yeah.
And then I thought, microbes, macrobes, little amoebas, big amoebas, archons, what's the deal? So do you have a take on that?
Yeah, he claimed he was in contact with them and that they were, there was a certain means of supplicating them. There was a language, or I should say a chant or mantra that he would do in order to invite them in and basically to use them as allies. Or I should say that they, you know, there's a thing. Yeah. You can, I have a friend here in New England, dear friend, he's a shaman, and he's been telling me, giving me advice about how you can actually make allies of these entities. Mm-hmm. By feeding them your negative energy. Not that you want to generate it, but he says, you know, when you're feeling negative, just, you know, visualize that you have a bowl, a mercy bowl, and you're putting it in there. And he says, they're like wild animals. You know, they'll come around. And he says, eventually you will tame them. And I'm like, whoa.
Leaving out a bowl of milk for the hedgehogs, yeah.
Yeah. Except, and he says, and at some point, once you've tamed them, then they will actually be your ally. I'm like, oh, this is wild. This is really wild. I was very resistant at first. I'm like, no, they can't have my energy. Wait a minute. I don't want negative energy. Well, okay, if they're not stealing it from me, maybe that doesn't sound... Yeah, actually, that sounds very empowering. It took me a while. Yeah. I'm sort of, you know, giving you the short version of it, but...
Yeah. It's a bit like giving the dog the pizza crust, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's how we domesticated these supposed wild wolves, you know,
over crust, time. Yeah.
And they became our best friends because what do they do for us? Yeah. Not only do they give us some sort of protection, but they also give us friendship. Mm-hmm. So, it becomes a reciprocal relationship as opposed to a parasitic one. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm even mentioning it to you now because I don't know what John Dee was up to, but based on his life, I think he had a miserable life. Mm-hmm. So it must not have worked out well. Whatever relationship he had with these archons, macrobes, it didn't turn out too well for him or those around him. So I would have to say that, you know, probably not a good role model. No, because some people have said to me, oh, hey, there's a book out now here with a CD, and, you know, all you got to do is do these mantras and you can communicate with these beings. I'm like, you go right ahead. I'm not interested. Thank you.
Gonna go get myself a macrobe.
Not my cup of tea.
Because there's this thing about the university system was created as a result of this communication.
It's possibly. The university system we have now, I thought, originated with the mystery schools. Mm-hmm. And if you go to unicusmagazine.com, you'll see at the top banner it says, Know Thyself, because that was the original directive. When you went to a mystery school, if you were accepted as an initiate, that's primarily what you're going to do, self-realization. I mean, it sounds simple, but it's not. It isn't at all. I mean... And so I don't know where the current university system, I think, is not designed for us to know the universe, external or internal. I think a lot of it is just a mechanism of controlling us. They call it teaching. I do not want to be taught. I want to be educated. I'm here to educate myself. And what that literally means is to draw out the truth. Mm. Educate literally means to draw out truth. Teaching is a way of programming an individual, controlling. It's really what it is.
Yeah. I've often thought about, rather than calling out on the radio station here, this evening's programming is this evening's deprogramming.
Okay.
Includes Mr. Robert Stanley on the Archons on... Washington UFOs.
Well, since you didn't your archive, or what did you call it, the
archive, the recording.
Yeah, the recorder. Yeah,
we're recording now. We're recording.
I know.
Now,
then so. For posterity, I just want to make this quite clear. You said today is February 5th.
Yes.
Okay. February 5th, I'm announcing my resignation officially from the field of conspiracies and UFOs after 20 years. It's a little over 20 years, but yes, I've dedicated 20 years of my life professionally to researching and reporting on UFOs and conspiracies in general. And thank you, but I am done. I absolutely had enough. So just thought I'd put that out there. You get first dibs on that particular news item.
Thank you very much.
I'll
make sure that I have recorded that, and hang on, let me just check if the recorder's still working.
Okay, it's just the luck of the draw. Okay, just timing be what
that's right.
Being what it is.
Well, we've got the last half hour in it, and that's fine. So, how are you feeling?
I've only had one beer, but I'm a lightweight, so I'm a little lightheaded. But that's I'm still very much focused on the fact that we're having a rather important conversation. I think, talk radio is extremely important. It's one of the reasons I've spent a lot of time and energy, especially recently, in this field. It's fun, but it's also functional. You know, it really serves a purpose. People need to talk to each other about, everything.
Absolutely.
And anything that's on their mind. Mm. Without restriction. So I, especially as things become more corrupt and controlling, we need to have this outlet in a way to, this is what they really fear the most, is that we're actually going to unite. It's not just throwing off the shackles. I mean, what they really, really don't want us to do is to work together peacefully and come to some sort of agreement without them.
I think it's the difference between hive mind and flock mind, like you're talking about the starlings before, when they all move together, you know, nobody's saying let's go this way, let's go that way. It's just everybody gets to feel, oh, that's good, you know, this is the way to go.
Well, if our hive mind, or excuse me, what you're describing, if it's been infiltrated, then it's a problem. That's where I think we really, you know, you would not believe the response I got when I put out this information about that particular type of Archon and how it's a mental parasite. God, I mean, I had no idea how many people are going to write to me and say, I've seen this. I know it's real. You know, people from all walks of life. And they were thanking me, but in a way it was sort of like, I thought, oh, no. Now I've really stepped in it, you know, as if it wasn't bad enough. I'm exposing Washington, D.C. Now I've got all these people saying, oh, my God, yes, I've seen these things. They're real. Now what? Well, it's not my responsibility to do something about it. Each one of us has to wake up to the fact that these things do exist, that they're here covertly, that they must remain covert in order to maintain their level of manipulation over us. Because, boy, once enough of us wake up and actually see those things and know what they're doing, we will just say, oh, no, you don't. Mm-hmm. No, 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 you don't. And that's what I say. They really don't want that day to come. Their death, that's what they worry about.
I'm my mind drifts back to things like programs like Star Trek and Stargate, where due to some strange gamma radiation or whatever, these things become visible.
Right. Well,
there was one, that one on, that you mentioned that latches onto the back of Spock.
Okay, but they also found one that was as large as like an entire. It was consuming, in the process of consuming like a solar system or a galaxy or something.
Oh, wow.
It's enormous. It's all there on the press release. I mean, yes, there's been a few times where they actually. In fact, there was one episode where they talked about the Archon, but it was a machine that was controlling everybody's thoughts.
Ah.
And so Roddenberry actually was, it was a parody, mm-hmm, of what the Archons really are doing. I don't know how he knew this, sort of irrelevant, but I mean, he was, many times we've been shown truth as fiction.
Yeah.
You know, but this is what the Gnostics said, that the Archons are the masters of illusion, mm-hmm, sort of like the movie The Matrix. This is how they operate in plain sight, is by crafting all these various illusions and distracting us and misleading us so that we don't see them and know who they are, what they want from us, or what they're getting from us. And because, like I said, once enough people wake up to that, game over.
Yeah.
We're not going to play that game anymore.
So to me, the solution, because I'm always about solutions. The solution, mm-hmm, is to be able to show them. That's really the key, isn't it?
To expose them.
To,
yes,
find a way of revealing, you know, he's got some sort of flash gun. Poof! Oh, you can see them in the room.
Well, you said the gamma ray radiation. It may be. There may come a time when the universe simply says, okay, it's time to pull the curtain back and reveal these guys. And, a flash of energy literally could come racing across this world, and suddenly everybody would... do you remember the movie They Live?
Oh, yes.
By John Carpenter?
And huh? Yes, absolutely. They live amongst us.
Right, and once they were putting out the signal through, yeah, the television that was blocking people's ability to see the aliens, and then once the signal was cut, everybody was like, whoa, where did these aliens come from, you know?
Yeah.
So it's something like that, yeah, it could happen. It could absolutely happen. And I think, you know, being prepared for it now might actually be... or trying to deal with it now as opposed to later would probably be helpful, because it wouldn't be such a shock. I mean, somebody's got to have their wits about them when this happens.
Exactly. And this could be one of the things that... one of the reasons that people are waking up now,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to waking up at the end of the year, is that we can be prepared for the moment when suddenly we become... to quote one of these bloggers, fully conscious.
Yes, awakened. And you know what they say, it's very dangerous to suddenly awaken a sleepwalker.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but, you know, that's what they say. So, yeah, I suppose it's going to be a rude awakening for some. Others, it'll be sort of just like, oh, finally,
yeah,
you know.
That's what look over there. That's what I've been telling you about.
Yeah. See, I try to tell you, but woof, you know, and that's fine. It's it's really, it's all good. I know that's such a cliche saying, but when you take a step back and you look at the bigger picture, I see anyway a very loving creator that has provided all the opportunities that we need to grow, to continue our growth as creators in training, little gods. And it's a difficult classroom at times, but, you know, it serves a purpose. And I must say this, too, about our situation as an analogy to the classroom. When you go to class, that's not the real world. That's it's emulating, or I should say, you're studying vicariously the real world. Okay, that's the difference. It's hopefully to prepare you for the real world, right? It's the same way that where we are here. You know, that's why the Hindus call this this world Maya. It's an illusion. It is a classroom in that regard. It's not the real world. It's you know, that's a place to study to prepare us for the greater reality.
I think that might be a good place to finish, eh?
I certainly hope so. Either that or begin.
Well, perhaps Robert Stanley will be the new authority on archons, and it may be your next 20 years to well, maybe
don't
not.
Don't you dare.
Maybe
don't
20 you, weeks. Maybe no, 20 I, days. 20
I
minutes.
Am not, no, I am not going to accept that mantle because... no, it's just, look, I'm just a messenger. I'm not a messiah. I don't want people to think I'm going to heal them. I'm not here to do that. They can heal themselves. I mean, that's, you know, again, that was part of the thing I was becoming very uncomfortable about recently. And I think, you know, it may just be a side effect of having a show. You put a man in front of a microphone, suddenly becomes, you know, larger than life. And it's not like that at all. I'm absolutely flawed like everybody else, but I'm also divine too. You know, it's part of being human. It's who we are. It's what we are. So I think we can help each other through this. But part of the problem is here in this world, we cannot constantly look for someone else to do things for us, to lead us or mislead us, as the case may be. And so it's time to take responsibility and be all we really can be as gods, creators. Okay, I'm stepping off the soapbox now.
So, from one god to another, I'd like to thank you very much for...
thank you, JP.
...for being here now. On this show, with our lovely audience, we've got some really cool people, some very high thinkers, open-hearted people, and very discerning. And it's very good. I've been watching it, watching the chat room as we've been speaking, and yeah, they drifted off a few times into.
Yeah, there's a Super Bowl going on. Are you kidding? I'm surprised anybody's chatting right now. But anyway, I thank you so much for having me on, and I'll certainly keep in touch. And you know.
Yeah. Well, anytime you want to, you know, put some new stuff out there, or if you wake up in the middle of the night thinking, oh wow, I really wanted to tell him that.
All right.
Just write it on your bed. Don't call me.
Okay.
By the side. And then email me in the morning and we can arrange a show.
Will do.
It's been a great pleasure and honor to speak to you, Robert.
Thank you. Same here.
Incredibly interesting, incredibly stimulating, mentally thank stimulating. You. And so I just want to let everybody know that we're going to be in about 40 minutes, about 35 minutes. Ms. Muggsy will be on the air, and she'll be with the Searle Effect Generator Man. So it's all about anti-gravity. We are all anti-gravity today. No gravity, all levity.
Yeah, absolutely.
So from us at Wolf Spirit Radio to you, Robert Stanley, thank you very much, and... We're gonna. I'm just trying to be really smooth about this, and yep. I can't find my outgoing theme in my Ever Beyond intro. No, that's the intro. Where is it? Oh, dear, I hate this. Oh, I'm sorry. It's there somewhere. I've got two. Oh, there we go. Ever Beyond outro. I found it. There we go.
Wonderful.
So I'm going to play some music for the next half hour, and we'll rejoin everybody for Sam Muggsy's program. So with that...
Very good. Thank you.
And thank you very much, Robert, and good night. Beyond.